What really gets my dick hard is...
So fucking what?
Welcome to LP Podcast. I'm Ethan Luck.
I'm Clint Wells.
And this is Revisited number 4. Kind of a somber episode, short episode, because we're going to talk about Chris Cornell.
We are sadly having to talk about and remember and reminisce about the life of Chris Cornell because he passed away.
That's right. And we've got our guest here, Paul Moak.
Hey.
And Paul is going to be on the next episode as a full-on episode guest with the Bob Rock episode, but... we figured we'd have him on for this one as well because Chris Cornell and Soundgarden, all the things he's done, have impacted our lives greatly.
For sure.
Yeah, it's like, I guess, full disclosure, we've recorded our Bob Rock episode tonight, but while we were all here, because we all cared about Soundgarden so much, Soundgarden was such a huge part of why we love music and care about music, we figured we would take a few minutes to talk about Chris Cornell, this artist that we love and now miss so much.
Well, and I mean, if it is a Metallica podcast, but, you know, those guys were friends. They did Lollapalooza together. They did multiple shows together. That's enough for us to do a thing on Chris Cornell. Yeah, I think even if they had no relationship at all, they never played together, never even met, I think we would have still done this.
Well, actually, when we were taking a break out there, I looked this up. One of Metallica's most famous riffs might never have existed if not for Soundgarden, says ultimateclassicrock.com. Kirk went on record saying with Rolling Stone in 2008, Soundgarden had just put out Louder Than Love, and I was trying to capture their attitude towards a big, heavy guitar riff, and that's where Inner Sandman came from.
Unbelievable.
Wow. Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't really know how to like get into this whole thing other than, you know, when, you know, I found out he passed away. You know, I was just getting to a hotel in Virginia. It was like 4 a.m. I was in bed scrolling through Twitter and I saw it before I fell asleep, and instantly my adrenaline kicked up and I was just like, I couldn't believe what had just happened. Hmm. You know, I've listened to Soundgarden since that kind of explosion of the Seattle sound in the early 90s. And I would say I was always a bigger fan of Soundgarden than like a Nirvana. Not that I don't love Nirvana, but Soundgarden was one of those bands that just like challenged me as a musician. And like, I think this was the first time since Joe Strummer from The Clash died that I actually like sat there and thought about it and like actually shed some tears.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a similar experience. I hadn't really paid attention to much of what's been going on. I know they reunited, they made that King Animal record. They'd been touring. Matt Cameron's one of my favorite drummers. He's been with Pearl Jam since 1998.
Oh, yeah.
But I had all that. I mean, for me, it was Super Unknown, which was the record with Black Hole Sun and Spoon Man and
Oh, yeah, My
Day
Wave.
I Tried to Live and My Wave. And
perfect record.
but even going back before that, like Bad Motorfinger and Louder Than Love. And I mean, Spoon Man, I remember learning Spoon Man. I think we talked about this privately through text, but Soundgarden had this great way. The only other artist I can think of that really did this was Sting, in the sense that they wrote these odd time signatures.
Yeah.
But the songs were so good and hooky that you don't even know that they're weird. But when you try to learn them as a musician,
it's
like
tough,
I remember learning Spoon Man and having to like, it wasn't 7/8, right? Like it wasn't the standard 4/4 time signature. And it's, like you were just saying, like stretching and sort of learning how to compose music, which is what we all do for a living now. But like Soundgarden, I could really trace the thread to like learning how to compose music
definitely
dissecting their songs.
Yeah.
And both Soundgarden Alice in Chains kind of had
Audio Slave.
No, Alice in Chains.
Oh,
both Soundgarden and Alice in Chains
when they were happening at the time.
When they were happening,
okay,
both had a little more ties to like metal.
Yeah,
whereas like Nirvana was straight grunge.
Right,
you know, Pearl Jam, and it was an easier transition for me through those two bands to then find Nirvana and.
Yeah, Soundgarden kind of had that sort of like Sabbath, kind of the Sabbath power.
For sure.
Yeah.
Right? Like
they
sort
totally
of,
did.
And Alice in Chains, for sure. I guess they call that alternative metal.
Right.
However, we have to, I guess as human beings, we just have to categorize everything forever.
I mean, I think, you know, at the root, all that stuff is rock and roll, and there it has its roots in metal, and call it grunge, call it what you will, that it was at the time. But, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, bands like Soundgarden, guys like Chris Cornell were really good songwriters and composers and arrangers.
And it's sort of a conversation we're all having now, not just the three of us, but all of us music fans, are that it's an Elliott Smith type foreshadowing of the sort of darkness that Chris Cornell dwelt in. Is like his lyrics were sort of always overshadowed by how great his voice was.
Yeah. Yep.
But those lyrics, his lyrics are sort of masterfully composed and dark. And
when everything went down, we started texting each other, and our little thread about Like a Stone sums it up, man. I mean, like, I've just gone back and listened to pretty much Chris Cornell's entire catalog, and not all of it's perfect, for sure.
Yeah.
But I just think he was really dialed into the lyrical value of the struggle between what is life, what is death, what happens after life.
Yeah.
Like, all of that is so ingrained in a lot of his writing. And Like a Stone just sums up the totality of that thought to me. And that song has haunted me since that record came out.
Me too.
I actually couldn't listen to that song for the first few days after. And I don't know if that, you know, to the listeners sounds, you know, like a little weird that, you know, somebody I didn't know, I couldn't actually play one of their songs. But there were two songs that came to mind when I found out he died was, you know, that I couldn't bring myself to like open up my phone or my laptop and listen to. And it was Like a Stone and Say Hello to Heaven.
Oh, yeah.
I still haven't listened to that song yet because I know that I'll probably lose it. And I don't know. It brings up something for me with not knowing somebody and they pass away, but that person's been a part of your life, musically speaking, for so long. Like when Kurt Cobain died, like I was bummed, but you know, that was 1994.
Sure. 94, April 8th.
Yeah. You know, like I had just gotten into Nirvana like, you know, 3 years prior, you know, we're looking at pushing 30 years of being a fan of Soundgarden's music, you know, and Chris Cornell's music. So to be that impacted emotionally by somebody you don't know is a weird thing for me, but it's just natural. I think being a musician, an artist, and a writer, like, you connect with lyrics, you connect with music, the different parts they add to the songs, you know, there's an emotional connect to those things.
Yeah.
And for that long a time, it really impacted me to where I couldn't, you know, I was like, I can't listen to Say It Aloud to Heaven now.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
What was it for me, the avoidable song was, Say It Aloud to Heaven. Yeah. That was
Temple of the Dog song.
The Temple of the Dog song, which he wrote about Andrew Wood, the Mother Love Bone guy who died of a drug overdose.
Yeah.
So that song's kind of about this, like, you know, this confusion and anger and sadness about someone that's ripped away. And it did kind of become this sort of poetic. Yeah, Say It Aloud to Heaven's kind of become I've let my wife hear it. My wife was like, who's Chris Cornell? My wife loves music, but she's not as privy. She's not given her life to it the way that
we
have.
Sure, sure.
And
she's a normal human being.
She's a normal, stable person.
Yeah.
But I played her that song and she immediately was like, oh, I know that voice.
Right.
You know, like, and maybe Hunger Strike might be the more recognizable song from that record.
Yeah.
Reach Down or whatever. But yeah, Say It Aloud to Heaven. It's so prescient, right? That was like 1990.
Yeah.
Yeah, my wife was actually the one that told me that Chris Cornell had died, and it was right when I woke up and I got dressed and went to the studio, and she called me at like 1 p.m. and I answered the phone and she's like, hey, I'm just calling to check in on you because I know today's probably pretty rough. And I was like, well, it's, you know, I didn't know the dude, but yeah, it's been rough. And I got home and I was trying to explain to her like what I was feeling. And it was really difficult because I feel like being the age that I am, 37, and having Soundgarden be such a part of my formative years as a musician, as a kid learning how to grow up and like a 90s kid or whatever, and feeling like I've delved into this man's music and his lyrics so much that I feel like I do know him, even though I've never met him face to face. And then that juxtaposed with I'm in music, you know, when Scott Weiland died, it was tragic and sad, but there was part of me that was like, yeah, I kind of saw this coming.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, and then here's this guy that, as a dude in music, that's watched a lot of my friends struggle with addiction and, depression and things like that, to see this guy that it looked like on the outside, like, man, this guy's like, he's won. He's figured it out. He's like a rock star, but he's also got a family. He's stable. And then for this to happen, it just kind of seemed out of nowhere. I mean, Soundgarden had reunited. They just played a show, you know, and it just, it really hit me in ways that I couldn't even explain to my own wife of like, man, I don't know why I'm so... And it's still like that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't even explain it to some of the guys I tour with, you know, like, I looked at one dude, I was like, dude, Chris Cornell, and he's like, yeah, that's a bummer. And I was like, God, I've been in this funk all day, like, I can't really shake it. And he's like, well, you didn't know him. I'm like, well, yeah, I didn't know him, but I did.
Well, no,
you know,
well,
I,
no,
I knew a part of him, which was the musical side, you know, I didn't know him personally, but...
Well, no, and no offense to your friend at all, but... I get it. It does seem... I had the same struggle with trying to talk to my wife about it because I was super down and I was in the middle of being on the road and I had to immediately leave again that night. In a strange circumstance, I got home the morning we found out that he had passed, and then by midnight that night, I was leaving again. And my wife was like, you know, what's wrong? Is everything okay? And it's like, it seems lame to distill it into like, well, Chris Cornell died today.
Right.
Right.
Because obviously... You know, because the other thing too is like, I think at our age, we're in our mid 30s, late 30s. We've been touched by actually personal. I've known people who've committed suicide. I've had a few family members that have done it, and it does sort of seem cheesy or like a false victimization to try to like parlay grievance. But the deal is like, we've been listening to these records since we were kids.
Yeah.
And maybe it was kind of a one-way relationship, but it was definitely a relationship.
Dude, I think that's a great point. I think that...
That guy's been with me, whether he knew it or not, since I was like 8 years old.
Yeah.
Well, when Kurt Cobain died, it was tragic to me, but I was a kid.
We were young.
I was 13. I didn't know what actual death meant like. And now having experienced it in my own life, to think about this dude and his family, his kids...
Yeah. Like the ramifications of it. Yeah.
And you guys both have kids too. I mean, so the thought of like, you know, him dying and like his kids not having a father has got to affect you more than would me, you know?
Absolutely.
Well, the sort of rule that I put on myself when we got pregnant and had a kid, because I struggle with similar things I imagine Chris did. I mean, I think we've all talked about this. Like, we're all prone. We're kind of artist, musician types, whatever. But for me, the kid sort of takes suicide off the, suicide's not an option for me because I'm my kid. And that, I'm not saying anything grand about what Chris did or what he was dealing with. I'm just saying for me, so, cause you just mentioned the kid factor, for him to have felt that backed into a corner with his wife and his family and his band that was kicking ass and the legacy he'd made. It must have really been a tough spot.
Mm. Well, and without going into like, you know, too much detail of speculation on like what exactly happened, you know, his wife has recently come out and said
it was like,
you know, he was on
anti-anxiety
medicine, and they talked after the show and he had taken a couple extra and sounded kind of slurry. So she questions kind of how it went down. Like, it wasn't necessarily like a premeditated thing, you know, but I don't know, a lot of people, you know, in situations like this with when, you know, someone famous dies, you know, they want to sit there and talk all day long about like, well, what happened? How did he do it? And why did he do it? And all this stuff. And then, I mean, I'd love to know the answer, but at the same time, it's not going to change the fact that he's gone.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's also not going to change the fact that, you know, this person unknowingly has impacted my life as a musician and as a songwriter for so long, you know, and I'd rather hang on to that joy, you know, of his time on earth and,
yeah,
and his voice that he lent us for so long. I'd much rather hang on to that than sit around and, you know, well, what happened? Why did he do that? Or, you know, did this medication do this? And,
right.
And all that to say, I hope that his family finds peace in this whole thing. I hope his wife and kids, you know, find that peace and maybe some understanding and, you know, can move on from it and not, you know, feel like, oh, the media's doing this and we think something else, you know. That's my biggest hope for them, you know.
Yeah.
But for me, as a fan of his, you know, I hope that other people find kind of what I'm finding is, you know, yeah, I'm sad about this. I feel like I've been impacted by this guy for a long time, and I'm going to continue to just enjoy what he's left us on this earth.
Well, and let's just be honest. I don't think anyone would argue that he's probably one of the best singers of our generation.
100%.
100%, yeah.
And he kind of always downplayed his lyrics, saying like, I just like to paint pictures, and, you know, once the song leaves my body, it's up to the person listening to decide what it's about and all of that. But but he was a fantastic lyricist.
Great lyricist.
And I think he kind of hid, and maybe because of some of the demons he was struggling with, kind of hid what songs were about behind just the fact that he was a singer that was unmatched in that time.
I saw a really cool interview with the bass player of Rage, who was in Audioslave, Tim Bob.
Yeah.
Timmy C.
Yeah. Why did I say Tim Bob?
I don't know.
Does anyone know?
Because we're in the South.
This is like 10 years ago. This is like after Audioslave's second record, and this is way before Chris passed. And he said, Chris fooled me for a long time. I thought that he was just this great voice and this great front man. And he actually mentions Like a Stone, and he talks about, I thought that song was about a relationship, like, I'm waiting for you in this house, like a stone. And he said, I asked Chris one time, like, what's that song about? And Chris said, that's a song about me waiting to die.
Mm.
Yeah.
And he was like, even after I'd been in a band with this guy, I went back and read all his lyrics. I went back to Soundgarden and Temple of the Dog. And
wow.
And he was like, he fooled me, you know, like he, yeah. And my experience with that, I was in a cover band when I was 16 and playing with guys 10, 15 years older than me. And at the time that Like a Stone was a big hit. We did Show Me How to Live and Like a Stone. I think we did Cochise. We did a few Audioslave songs.
You were just an Audioslave cover band.
We just did the first Audioslave record three times in a row, and then called it a night.
Yeah. I would have been there.
And I made my $100 and drove my Chevy Nova back to high school. But I remember a guy in my life, I had been playing Like a Stone on a stage for like 2 years.
Yeah.
And there was a guy in my life, I can't remember the circumstances, but he was smarter than me and more sensitive than me. And he was like, dude, have you ever really paid attention to what that song is? And I was like, no, this is kind of this cool little mid-tempo rock epic. And he was like, dude, it's like, this is a song about a guy who's in a hotel reading a Bible.
Hmm.
And the implications of the message of the Bible are like weighing on him. And then the whole bridge about like, and on I read until the day was done. I sat in regret for all the things I've done.
Oh, it's beautiful.
All that I've blessed and all that I've wronged.
Mm.
And it's like, that dude is like, he really did kind of hide it because the vocal's so great. The song is so good where you're like, I don't care what he's saying. It's
maybe
so good.
Do you think maybe it was uncomfortable for him to like really tell people what was going on in his head and let them figure it out through the lyrics?
Because
Kurt Cobain always did that. He was always like, they don't mean anything. Like, we always just write it off.
My guess is that the culture of the time didn't pay attention as much. Like, if you weren't Bob Dylan, like someone like Jason Isbell today, who we all have connections into that world.
Yeah.
He's generally considered one of the greatest lyricists mm-hmm. working today. Rightly so.
Of course,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. But culture's at a place now where we're so inundated with one side of kind of pop music
yeah.
to where if someone like Jason Isbell's on the scene, his potent, articulate lyrics stand out so much that they sort of demand to be paid attention to.
Yeah.
I don't think the era that Chris came up in cared as much.
Mm.
So it kind of got glossed over.
Yeah. Do you think maybe a lot of that had to do with like the success of Nirvana and how much they exploded and everyone paid attention to Kurt Cobain and overanalyzed everything he was doing? That Soundgarden had their success. They became a really big band, but people weren't getting the magnifying glass out over Soundgarden as much as they were Nirvana.
Maybe,
I don't know.
I think they had more going on musically, and by that I mean weird time signatures, weird guitar riffs that...
Yeah. It was a little left of center, right?
Yeah. And so I think that maybe attracted a little bit more of the attention to like, oh, this band is like musically
yeah.
got it going on. Where Nirvana was very unapologetic about, we want this to be
it was
as
raw.
Simple as possible.
Yeah, totally.
Whereas Black Hole Sun is not in a shitty gimmicky way, but that was kind of affected. The guitar has a weird effect
yep.
on it. The video was very strange.
Yeah.
The video is kind of the takeaway of that song.
Yeah.
If you remember that time. I mean, the song obviously stands, but...
Oh, yeah.
I remember seeing... This is a long time ago, way before Chris passed, like 10 years ago. It was like an Audioslave show. I guess when they were doing Audioslave, they would do like a couple of Rage songs. Like, you can see a video of like Chris doing Killing the Name Of, and it's like...
Which is gotta be weird.
It doesn't work.
But he would also yeah. do a couple Soundgarden songs
so
acoustic.
He came out and did Black Hole Sun acoustic. And earlier, before we did this, Paul picked up a guitar from Ethan's studio and actually played the chords to Black Hole Sun. And when you hear it really stripped down like that, it's... As from a songwriting standpoint, which we're all songwriters too, is like,
yeah.
holy shit, how did he write
yeah.
that?
Yeah,
what's
that's
going
the first
on?
Thing Paul said. He's like, how did the fuck did he write this
how did
thing?
He, how did he think to do that?
Yeah, no, his songwriting and even, I mean, the whole band, I mean, it was pretty unconventional, especially for like the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
I mean, they were doing stuff, you know, that like, as far as odd time signatures and stuff, I mean, that's what like prog rock bands would do. Bands mm-hmm. like Rush and Genesis and whoever.
But that's why I mentioned Sting, because one of Sting's greatest hallmarks is his musical knowledge is so deep that he can write that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
yeah.
But it doesn't sound proggy or like heady.
Yeah.
He's able to write it in a way that's...
Sounds pop.
It's like pop music.
Yeah, yeah totally.
And I think one of the unfortunate hallmarks of someone like him passing away is we all go... dive back in.
Yeah.
Which I know I've been doing big time. And
oh, yeah.
It's like all these songs I loosely, I would say, took for granted. I didn't really take them for granted. Soundgarden's always been kick-ass.
Second, right.
Anyone ever asked me in the last 20 years, what's up with Soundgarden? I'm like, well, they kick-ass.
Yeah, they're fucking awesome.
Even if I haven't like dipped in recently, but...
Totally.
Kind of immersing myself in especially Bad Motorfinger and Super Unknown.
Yeah.
Which also, Down on the Upside, amazing record.
It's a great mm-hmm. record, yeah.
But yeah, odd time signatures, odd chord changes, odd tunings.
Yeah, tunings, yeah, for sure.
The vocal gymnastics that he was pulling
off.
And
they're all insanely talented musicians. I mean, people obviously know Matt Cameron outside of Soundgarden and Pearl Jam, but I mean, him as a drummer is incredible. Kim mm-hmm. Thayil stuff, I mean, those dudes.
Ben Shepherd was amazing.
Yeah,
yeah.
Those dudes just had their stuff down, man. I mean, and they, you know, they knew what they were doing. It seemed very well orchestrated. And I think Cornell's melodies and lyrics kind of, for me, it's kind of tied it all together. Like there's
yeah.
this chaotic piece to every guy in the band. And then, you know, like you said, you know, taking something with like crazy odd time signatures and make it into a pop song. And it's something very catchy, like Black Hole Sun, like the bridge is a really cool yeah, totally. Like that is,
it's, we just played a tape just now.
If you're a musician,
way,
it's in 9/8, by the way. You count it. And,
can you explain 9/8 to people?
I don't want to right now. I'm talking about Chris Cornell.
You know how a guitar player counts 7/8? Have you ever heard this joke?
No.
Here's how a guitar player counts 7/8, which is, you know, two bars of four. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Make the 7.
Yeah. Nice. Sorry, that probably went over like 99% of people's heads, but it was nerdy and fun.
No. That's a good joke. I'll have to repeat that one.
What do you think the legacy of Chris, because, which we should also mention the, what's the solo record you mentioned? The
Higher Truth.
Yeah.
Oh, Higher Truth.
It just came out last year, and I was going to bring it up at some point here, but I hadn't listened to it. Like, I actually did, you know, the ignorant side of me, I didn't know it came out. And after he passed away, like, I was listening to Soundgarden, Audioslave, and some of his early solo records. The record Carry On.
Well, I was going to mention Euphoria Morning.
Yeah, that's a great record.
Yeah.
But even just, if anyone listening hasn't really dove into Chris's solo stuff, his latest record, I was listening to it today when I was running errands. It's so good. Mm. There's, like, elements of folk and country and... But it all, again, tying his voice, you know, back into what makes his songs great. You hear these you know, parts on the song and it sounds, oh, this is kind of a country sounding song. And then all of a sudden he starts singing and you're like, oh no, this is a Chris Cornell song.
Yeah.
It's just, his voice has that, you know, that ability to just, it doesn't matter what he's doing musically. When he starts singing, it makes it, you know, his. And I think that's a gift that not a lot of people have as singers.
Yeah, I agree. Even for my wife to be like, oh yeah, I know that voice.
Yeah.
You know, it's just in culture. And rock and roll and pop music is not that old. So we're just living in a time where we're starting to see these people go, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what feels really senseless about Chris's death is that he was 52 and... on a tour with his band.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we have friends that we work with that are that age. It's, we're not that far from that age. So
Right. There's
a sense where it's, and I know a lot of our listeners have grown up with this band or maybe Chris's age, even, like, there's a sense where it's really hitting. And I think it's important for all of us to know that we're not alone. And I remember when we were testing about it that day, you were pretty bummed, and it was really helpful to have that thread.
Yeah, totally.
And say, it's okay that we're all sort of abnormally bummed about this guy dying.
Totally.
It felt like kind of part of, what is it that you said that I really loved about it was, Paul had texted something about, it's our connection to, it's sort of where we started getting into music.
Yeah.
And we're having to deal with that sort of passing away, and what does it mean for us? And do you remember what you sent? Where I was like, holy shit, you nailed it.
It was something like that. But yeah, it's the thought that, you know, these are the heroes of our childhood and that they impacted us to cause us to actually pursue this as a career.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not only that, but like, I don't know, I guess I just looked up to him as a kind of a role model in that I have a family. He's a successful rock star that has a family. And it's like, as much as I want to be Lemmy or whatever, I actually like having a wife and kids.
Yeah, I do too.
And it was like, here's a guy that has, he's got one foot in each side.
We kind of felt like he figured it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas with Kurt, it was like, he kind of, you know, you better to burn out than fade away.
Sure.
He was young, even though he did have a family, but he was like 24. I mean, how old was Kurt? Like, he, you know,
27, right?
It's weird when it's a 52-year-old where you feel like they've weathered fame and success, and his band fell apart. Then he had a
Like he was on the other side of all.
Yeah,
that,
it kind of seems like.
Yeah, definitely. Like he's endured so much already. Like, what could, you know, cause him to get to this point?
I know for us in our mid-30s here, what we're doing, people like him, I look towards.
Yeah.
Of like, how do we do this into our 50s? He was a guy I looked towards.
Yeah.
I mean, he just made a record last year. I didn't get any other details than this, but the other day, working Kings Leon show, there's a set change point in our show, and I'm kind of behind this curtain, like waiting to take out, you know, some drums for Nathan, the drummer. And he came up to me, and he pulled his ear out, and he just goes, "Man, crazy about Chris Cornell, right?" And I just looked at him, I go, "Dude, I've been bummed all day." And he's like, "Dude, when we were doing our new record, he was in the studio next to us doing his current solo record, the Higher Truth record. I didn't know this." And he was he literally had to walk out on stage to do something like 20 seconds later. And he like leaned in and he goes, "One of the nicest, most kind people I've ever met. He was so cool and just wanted to chat and hang out with us." And just kind-hearted person. And a lot of things I've read online are that way.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, cool to hear from, you know, firsthand encounter of that, you know. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what you know, what's going on behind closed doors or in his heart and his head. You know, I just know that I'm, you know, thankful for what he gave us while he was here.
Absolutely, man.
Me too. Yeah, it's, yeah. Well, and at least we have, you know, we have the tunes.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we're not his family or his kids or, you know, but we have the records, and I don't know. I've been listening to them a lot. I think a lot of us have.
Yeah,
but really digging in, and it speaks to the power of music, too, of like, I don't know, they resonate differently in our age, him mm-hmm. gone, and I dealt with this with Prince last. Prince was the big blow last year for me,
yeah.
Even though we had Bowie, too, and I don't know, man. It fucking sucks, dude.
Yeah.
I don't know how it to wrap does, it up yeah. in a bow. I'm getting bummed. It sucks.
No, and also, you know, it makes you think about just, you know, mortality in general. Like, of course, we're all going to go one day, you know, but when it happens like this, you know, it's just a bit of a blow, you know? And, yeah, I've been trying, for me personally, outside of just listening to his music and enjoying what he created, you know, I've just been trying to like keep my mind on, you know, his family, you know, because I try to put myself in their shoes and it hurts. Mm. And I can't imagine what they're feeling. You know, I hope and pray that, like I said earlier, they find peace in all this, you know, that especially as kids, you know, I mean, they're, you know, I know decently young and stuff. And, you know, I can't imagine being in their position, you know, and maybe for them listening to his records is going to hurt, you know, for us, it hurts a little bit, but it for me, it brings a little more joy. Like, gosh, what a great artist, you know? So.
Well, maybe it's helpful for them to know that little misfits like us in the corner of the world, that it helped us figure out who we are and
yeah.
how
yeah.
to move forward and how to survive. Sure. And
yeah, I hope they, his whole family finds a way to do the same. Quick question.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say favorite Cornell track, but one of your top Cornell tracks.
You want me to go?
Yeah, let's let Paul go.
Well, the 15-year-old in me would say Black Hole Sun, but man, Like a Stone has just literally haunted me since the day that Audioslave record came out.
I'm going to echo that. I mean, for me, it's Like a Stone. If we wanted to go Soundgarden, I would say Pretty Noose. I think Pretty Noose captured my like, I loved learning how to play that, but I couldn't quite do it because totally. I didn't have a wah pedal. The deep cut on Super Unknown would be Fresh Tendrils. That's one of my favorite songs.
If I had to do Soundgarden, it would be Rusty Cage.
Rusty Cage, yeah. Bad Motorfinger.
Yeah.
For me, I mean, I'll say that Super Unknown consumed my life and kind of still does.
Like, yeah, totally.
I've had it in most every format you can get for music.
You have a Laserdisc?
I don't have the Laserdisc.
I doubt it.
I haven't found that one. But
you did say most, in fairness.
Yeah. Day I Tried to Live.
Oh, dude. Oh,
gosh. Man. Again, another odd time signature, and then his voice comes in.
Super weird time signature.
Yeah. And that really shows his range on that song, too. It's such a great song, but like that one, when I first got my Guild S100, which is the guitar that Kim Thal plays, the first song I played on it was Fell on Black Days.
Dude.
Yeah. And that, it's such a great guitar part. And,
also another odd time signature, right? So ever no. Is it normal?
Yeah, it's in 6/8.
The 6/8. Riff is
6/8.
It's in 6, yeah.
thank
they
God.
They're sitting there counting. Like, one,
thank
two,
God.
Three.
Let me push my glasses up my nose.
Yeah, seriously.
Well, is it 6/8 or is it 3/4?
No, I sprung that on you guys just because that just popped in my head. Like, just I was thinking of other songs in my head, and I figured I'd ask you guys, and you know, a good way to kind of.
And those kind of seem like go-tos, like they make sense, but not even to mention the Temple of the Dog stuff.
Oh, of course, dude. Yeah.
Hunger Strike and Say Hello to Heaven, Reach Down, Times of Trouble.
Hunger Strike was the first song that that was actually just playing on Lithium when I got in my truck the day that it was announced that he was dead.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Going to work, and I literally had to pull the truck over.
Dude.
Yeah, totally.
It's a heavy loss, man. It really does. I'm glad we can talk about it this way and share it with our fans who I do think feel this way too.
Yeah. Yeah.
It does feel, it's a loss.
Yeah,
it is. I mean, it you know, the only comparison I could give as far as like the impact of our generation having a Chris Cornell, you know, I think about my dad telling me stories about Robert Plant.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Like listening to him.
He was
like,
definitely in that vein of singer.
Yeah. To me,
he had
it's
those
like,
chops.
Like, I'm not going to say he's the next Robert Plant because I don't really like those terms, but he's kind of our generation's Robert Plant.
For sure. 100% agree.
Over any other band that came out and like got kind of exploded in the 90s, you know, they were around earlier, but, you know, someone that like you listen and watch sing and you're like, oh my God, his voice.
Yeah. Well, even a song like a Stone, I know that when he passed away, Paul and I did tributes on our Instagram pages where we tried to sing that song. It's a monster to sing.
Oh, dude. Oh, yeah. I wanted to delete mine because it was so bad.
No, I loved your version of it because it was so pure.
I don't
pure.
Think you should delete that.
Your version of it made me fucking tear up, dude. But his register was so insane. If you really want to hear his pipes, go listen to Say Hello to Heaven. Because
oh, my gosh, yeah.
His range is like Mariah Carey type range. But if you want to hear...
Or Day I Tried to Live. I mean, that...
dude.
Yeah.
He
hits... And Outshined,
gosh,
too.
Gosh, yeah.
Which Outshines on Bad Motorfinger.
Yeah.
I would say go seek out him playing Like a Stone acoustic.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's so fucking sick and deep and crazy. And the look in his eye when he's singing that lyric.
Totally, man. Yeah, there's a lot of good, I mean, Cornell stuff outside of the main bands. I mean, his solo stuff. He did a thing called the Chris Cornell Songbook.
Mm-hmm.
Where he does like Audioslave, Soundgarden, solo stuff, all acoustic.
Oh, cool.
Wow.
It's so beautiful. Like, he had a knack for doing that, man. I mean, he could be in a heavy ass band like Soundgarden.
Did you guys see that show where he's doing one of his solo tours and he wants to cover the song One by U2?
And yes. He sings One by Metallica.
And he's like, I was looking up the lyrics and the number one hit for One lyrics was Metallica. And he sings the lyrics to Metallica's One over the melody.
Yeah. And it sounds
darkness imprisoning me.
And it sounds beautiful.
It's fucking awesome.
It's great. I would love. I don't know if he ever recorded a studio version of that, but I would love to hear that.
That's brilliant. The other thing that I always heard over the years was that he played all the rhythm tracks on all of the Soundgarden, kind of like how y'all talk
kind
about
like
James.
Hetfield, yeah.
That Thale just did the solos.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
great guitar player.
Great guitar player. Yeah. I mean, even live, if you watch footage of them playing, I mean, like. When I hear the intro to, you know, Fell on Black Days, I always just think of Kim Thiel. But if you watch live footage of it, it's Chris playing it.
Ooh.
Yeah. Great guitar player, yeah. So good. God, what a monster talent.
Hmm.
Well, this is our love letter, right? This is our our sort of send off, right? Yeah.
We love you, Chris.
Love you, Chris. We miss you.
We love you, Chris. I'm gonna miss you. I'm gonna miss Chris Cornell as long as I live. I'm gonna teach those songs to my kid.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna play these songs. To myself.
Totally.
I've been playing Like a Stone at my house.
Yeah.
Every day.
And again, I've been a little bit repetitive about it, but to Chris Cornell's family, I really hope you find peace in all this.
Yeah, love and peace to those people.
Yeah.
For sure.
Thanks for listening, guys.
All right, peace.
Bye.
Until the day was gone, and I said,